Hello and welcome to this week's reading of The Week magazine, the best of U.S. and international media, all you need to know about everything that matters. I'm reading from the May 3rd issue. First, we turn to The World at a Glance. From Tehran, War on Women? As it trades missile attacks with Israel, Iran launched a new wave of repression at home, creating a new arm of the morality police and deploying hundreds of officers to arrest women for dress code violations like failing to wear a hijab. Videos on social media, many with the Persian hashtag for War on Women, show police grabbing women, pushing them into white vans. Journalist Dina Ghalibaf, rearrested this week after posting about her assault during an arrest the previous day, "I was violently taken to a room and subjected to electric shock," she wrote. "I was handcuffed. One of the officers sexually assaulted me." Iran's morality police have been less active since the death of a young woman in police custody in 2022 sparked the Women, Life, Freedom mass protest movement. Moving to New Delhi, world's biggest election. Polls opened last week in the first phase of the largest election the world has ever known. Nearly 970 million people, more than 10% of the global population, are eligible to vote in India's parliamentary elections, which will be held in stages over 6 weeks. Prime Minister Narendra Modi is favored to win a rare third term, and an outright majority for his Bharatiya Janata Party, which would give him a strong mandate to continue his Hindu nationalist agenda. Since BJP came to power in 2014, India has seen massive infrastructure growth and become the world's fastest-growing economy. But violence against the Muslim minority has surged. Opposition leader Rahul Gandhi said Modi has used the government for political ends, targeting opposition figures in corruption investigation. From Sydney, censoring X. Elon Musk has accused Australia of censorship after a federal court ordered X to take down what the government calls, quote, terrorist content, end quote. A video of a knife attack on an Assyrian bishop that occurred 2 weeks ago in a Sydney church, after X said it had blocked the video in Australia while keeping it available elsewhere, ensuring Australians still access it using a VPN. The eSafety Commissioner this week won a court injunction ordering X to block the video everywhere. On X, Musk said he would appeal, saying an unelected official in Australia shouldn't have the authority over all countries on Earth, and noting that the injured bishop supported keeping the video up online. He also called Australian Senator Jacquie Lambie, who deleted her X account in protest, quote, an enemy of the people, end quote. Moving to Dresden, Germany, suspected spy for China. Concern was growing over Chinese spying activities in Europe this week after at least six suspected spies were arrested. In Germany, authorities detain Jean Gau, an aide to European Parliament member Maximilian Kra, the extreme-right Alternative for Germany party, accusing him of sharing information about parliamentary affairs with Chinese intelligence. If it is confirmed, said Interior Minister Nancy Faeser, then that is an attack on European democracy from within. The arrest came a day after three German nationals were arrested for allegedly sharing military secrets with China. And in Britain, two men were charged this week with spying for China, including one who worked for the chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee. From Caracas, sanctions return. The Biden administration reimposed oil and gas sanctions on Venezuela last week, saying President Nicolas Maduro had broken his promise to hold democratic elections. Since last October, the U.S. had temporarily allowed American companies to buy Venezuelan oil after Maduro's government agreed during negotiations in Barbados to allow a free and fair vote this year. But while the regime led a few challengers to Maduro's register for the upcoming election in July, it barred the most popular possible candidates, including leading opposition figure Maria Corina Machado. Venezuela has warned that if Washington imposes, quote, economic aggression, end quote, it will stop allowing reparations of Venezuelan migrants from the U.S., where hundreds of thousands have fled in recent years. And from Toronto, gold heist solved. Canadian police arrested 9 people last week in connection with the theft of $14.5 million in gold bars from Toronto's International Airport last April. The heist, it was caught on security cameras. Driver presented a fraudulent shipping document that gave him access to an airport warehouse where a container of 6,600 gold bars had just been unloaded from a flight from Switzerland. Then loaded it all onto his truck and drove off. Last September, the driver was arrested in Pennsylvania with 65 guns. U.S. and Canadian officials said he was part of a larger plot to use proceeds from the gold to smuggle weapons into Canada. "This isn't just about gold," said local official Nando Jenica. "This is about how gold becomes guns." Next, we'll move to some sample editorials. Congress passes long-delayed Ukraine-Israel aid. What happened? The $95.3 billion aid package, including desperately needed weapons and munitions for Ukraine, was signed into law by President Biden this week after a bipartisan alliance of lawmakers overcame months of resistance from isolationist Republicans. House Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican of Louisiana, defied threats to his speakership from GOP hardliners by bringing 4 bills to the floor, which collectively mirrored a $95 billion aid bill passed by the Senate in February, one that Johnson had refused to bring up for a vote. The bills included $60.8 billion for Ukraine, $26.4 billion for Israel and Gaza humanitarian aid, and $8.1 billion to counter Chinese threats against Taiwan and the Indo-Pacific region. A 4th bill, added to draw conservative support, includes a provision giving the Chinese owner of the social media site TikTok 9 months to sell or face a possible U.S. ban. All passed handily with bipartisan support. Ukraine bill was approved 311 to 112. All the no votes were Republicans. Sent to the Senate as a single package, the package passed 79 to 18. "It was a difficult path," Biden said after signing the legislation, "but in the end, we did what America always does. We rose to the moment." Aid for Ukraine will arrive at a crucial time for the embattled U.S. ally, which is running low on stocks of crucial weapons and is facing relentless Russian attacks. CIA Director Bill Burns told Congress that Ukraine could lose by year's end without new aid. General Christopher Cavoli, head of the U.S. European Command, said Ukrainian artillery was, quote, "being outshot by the Russian side 5-1, end quote. Such testimony helped convince Johnson to push the aid forward over the opposition of right-wing representatives who, with Donald Trump's encouragement, have variously opposed any Ukraine aid or insisted it be tied to border security measures. "This is not a game," said Johnson. "History will judge us." Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican of Georgia, accused Johnson of, quote, "complete surrender," end quote, to Democrats, and vowed to push through a measure to oust him from the speakership. At least 2 fellow Republicans said they'd back the effort. Others said they'd consider it. "He's fallen right in line with the swamp," said Representative Eli Crane, Republican of Arizona. What the editorial said. The bipartisan effort was a victory for both Ukraine and functional American governance, said the Chicago Tribune. Trump, a devoted fan of Russian President Vladimir Putin, did his best to block Ukraine aid, and a stranglehold on the MAGA caucus meant we, quote-unquote, inexcusably left Kyiv hanging for months. But a rock-ribbed conservative from Louisiana summoned the courage to defy his party's extremists and push through aid that serves vital American interests. Johnson deserves immense credit for risking his political future in the service to his country. This was a show of will from the U.S. that will reverberate around the world, said the Wall Street Journal. While we celebrate dodging a geopolitical disaster, we must call out the 14 House GOP isolationists who voted against all four aid bills, and the 15 GOP senators who voted no. Apparently, they think we should ignore allies threatened by authoritarians on the march, like the 1930s Republicans who slept while Hitler and Tojo advanced. They lost this time, but this GOP tendency is dangerous. What the columnist said, Johnson's decision to back the aid package after months of opposition was the culmination of a remarkable personal and political arc, said Katie Edmondson in the New York Times. He met with top national security officials and broad functions of GOP voters. He thought about his son, who was bound for U.S. Naval Academy, and he prayed for guidance. Ultimately, he was moved by descriptions from Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and others of the magnitude of misery Russia has unleashed in Ukraine and their warning that Putin's expansionist aims pose a broader threat in Europe and beyond. Johnson then became part of an extensive effort to convince Trump not to sabotage the bill, said Jonathan Martin in Politico. Former cabinet officials, retired generals, Republican lawmakers, and foreign officials, including British Foreign Minister David Cameron, Polish President Andrzej Duda, made an aggressive case, many during trips to Mar-a-Lago. In one prong of the successful effort, Johnson and other Republicans warned Trump that if Kyiv fell, he'd take office in January to a crisis overseas. The House Speaker is no profile in courage, said Jennifer Rubin in the Washington Post. To praise Johnson as a hero ignores the immense damage he and House pro-Russian propagandists inflicted on our suffering allies, and were left twisting in the wind as MAGA lawmakers blocked aid that had wide bipartisan support. Delivered sooner, it could have prevented countless Ukrainian deaths and avoided a damaging blow to America's global credibility. What's next? If Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene follows through with her threats to attempt to remove Johnson from his speaker's chair, he will almost certainly need to rely on Democrats to bail him out, said Veronica Strucker-Lucy in CNN.com. Greene has already filed a motion to remove Johnson. Representatives Paul Gosar, Republican of Arizona, and Thomas Massey, Republican of Kentucky, have said they'll support it. That's enough to sink Johnson if Democrats all vote for his ouster. Whether the Democrats will throw him a lifeline isn't yet clear, but senior Republicans who back Johnson believe they can count on support across the aisle. Meanwhile, U.S. aid is now moving toward Ukraine, said Jordan Fabian and Bloomberg. The first $1 billion shipment will include air defense interceptors, artillery rounds, armored vehicles, and anti-tank weapons. U.S. officials have, for the first time, acknowledged they are supplying long-range ATACMS missiles, which Ukraine has long desired, in a push to strike deeper into occupied territory, and which were used last month to hit Russian troops in southeastern Ukraine. The next segment from The Week magazine, Best Columns. First, Israel, a mild response to Iran's shock and awe barrage. The era of Israeli deterrence is over, said Ben Caspit in Mariv from Israel. For decades, Iran has battled Israel through proxy militias it funds in Syria, Lebanon, and beyond, not daring to strike Israel directly. But now, it has done just that, retaliating for an Israeli airstrike on an Iranian consulate in Syria that killed a top Iranian general in early April. Tehran hurled some 300 ballistic missiles and killer drones at Israeli territory. While the barrage was stopped by our airtight missile defense system, Iran had to be punished for its unprecedented assault. So how did the Israel Defense Forces respond? With a single pinpoint bite. A strike on an Iranian airbase in Isfahan. The lopsided exchange makes clear that the two enemies' strategic calculations have been flipped. Iran showed the whole world that it had lost its fear. Israel, meanwhile, reacted minimally so as not to rock the boat and provoke Iran. This is the behavior of a deterred state. Had Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu been in opposition, he would have called such a response pathetic. Washington controlled the rhythm of the Iranian-Israeli clash, said Hamada Fatana in al-Dustur from Jordan. As if to avoid doing too much damage, Tehran telegraphed its attack on Israel well in advance, and as anticipated, the U.S. came to Israel's defense, leading a coalition that included Jordan and other Sunni Arab countries to help Israel shoot down nearly every missile from Shiite Iran. But then the U.S. restrained Israel from responding in kind. Where Netanyahu had planned a more effective and harmful strike on multiple Iranian military targets, President Biden forced him to pare it back to avoid a wider Middle East war that could loop in the U.S. If such a war terrifies you, imagine if Iran had nuclear weapons, said Baria Al-Mudin in Arab News from Saudi Arabia. That could happen in a matter of months. Since President Donald Trump killed the internationally backed 2015 Iran nuclear deal, which had limited Iran's ability to pursue a weapons program, Iran has been vigorously churning out highly enriched uranium and is working on a missile warhead. We know that Israel already has undeclared nuclear weapons. If Israel's leaders continue to push threat levels above the boiling point, there is a real risk of nuclear apocalypse. Israel needs to shift gears, said Yossi Yehoshua in Yerioth Aharonoth from Israel. Restored deterrence against Iran. Israeli intelligence drastically underestimated how Iran would react to the assassination on its consular territory. Military Intelligence Chief Major General Aaron Haliva resigned in disgrace this week, partly over that blunder, but it was just one of many devastating miscalculations that have occurred under this Netanyahu government, starting with a shocking failure to anticipate Hamas's October 7th attack. Bloody war in Gaza that resulted is now spiraling out across the region and has left our relations with the U.S. in tatters. All of this must be repaired. Without American aid, we'd be fighting the enemy with matzo boxes. It's time to bring a swift end to the Gaza war. Only then can Israel build up its military power to face this newly emboldened Iran. From Egypt, the rise of Arab manfluencers, from Firas Dalati Daraj. The men's rights trend came late to the Arabic-speaking internet, said Firas Dalati, but Egyptian social media is now crawling with toxic manfluencers. It started when YouTube began offering Arabic translations of context by Andrew Tate, the misogynistic British-American kickboxer turned provocateur. After Tate ostensibly became a Muslim in 2022, he began twisting Islam to justify his caveman take on gender roles, and local copycats sprang up across the Arab world. All profess the same rags-to-riches story. Jordanian TikToker Jamal Abu Muawis even sports the same alpha male look, bald head, trimmed beard, toned body, right shirt, sunglasses that never leave the eyes. Many of them hawk courses teaching males and males only how to become rich and powerful, like them. Their perverse appeal reflects a real social problem. Our grandfathers once supported an extended family on one salary, yet today two working parents can't make ends meet. Manfluencers sell the fiction that we can beat this crisis not by reforming the economy, or indeed critiquing capitalism, but by restoring a sense of traditional, quote-unquote, authentic masculinity. They're peddling a life of hedonism, devoid of all responsibility. What a sad, superficial concept of manhood. Best column from Italy, Don't Joke About Catholic Dogma, by Bruno Ballardini from Il Fatto Quotidiano. A cheeky potato chip commercial set in a convent? For Catholics in Italy, it's no laughing matter, said Bruno Ballardini. The Amica Chips spot shows a young novice receiving communion. As the priest places the wafer in her mouth, there's a loud crunching sound. Panic! The nun's eyes widen. The wafer must never be chewed, only swallowed. Cut to the Mother Superior sitting nearby, munching away from a bag of chips. It was she who issued the unholy crunch. Funny, right? But no, the heavens have opened up. Pronouncing the ad, quote-unquote, blasphemous, a Catholic media watchdog wants it yanked off the air. Christ reduced to a potato chip, proclaimed an outraged editorial in the Catholic newspaper Avenir, debased and vilified like 2,000 years ago. Some Catholics are steamed by the ad's slogan, Amica Chips, the Everyday Divine. Most are fuming over an online spoof that shows the Mother Superior dumping potato chips onto the communion vessel, a scene that never actually aired on TV. They're humphing over knee-jerk righteousness, over a blasphemy that never was. These Catholics profess to be shocked. I'm the one who was shocked by an overreaction worthy of the most violent Islamic fundamentalism. Can't anyone take a joke? And a best column from Bulgaria, Taking Comfort in Petty Corruption, by Alexander Andreev Denevnik. Bulgarians are still wallowing in communist-era levels of corruption because we like it that way, said Alexander Andreev. Sure, plenty of us complain that our leaders have ruined the country and demand to know if Bulgaria will ever recover. But these same people readily admit that they like being able to just slip the cop a few 20s any time they get pulled over for drinking and driving. In the communist decades, we saw such rule-breaking as a survival strategy, dubbed it petty justice. The authorities were against us, so we had to get away with whatever we could. Yet in truth, this mentality is neither socialist nor purely Bulgarian. It's the mark of a go-it-alone society with no shared values and little concern with the common good. It's as if every man for himself has become our national motto. Selfishness, not socialism, explains why we keep our own apartments spotless, but let our buildings' common spaces get filthy and stained. It explains the everyday rudeness on Bulgarian streets and the venality of local bureaucrats. Any gesture toward an anti-corruption reform movement unleashes a wave of anxious feelings in people, sure that if they are suckers enough to follow the rules, it will only let others get ahead. Reform may be possible someday, but for now, most Bulgarians would rather live with their sour status quo. Moving to the health and science segment next, hot oceans are killing corals worldwide. Record high ocean temperatures have triggered a mass bleaching event in coral reefs around the world. It's the fourth such event on record and on track to be the worst. Over the past 14 months, bleaching has been documented in every major ocean basin, from Florida coast to Australia's Great Barrier Reef. In some places, the water has been so hot that corals haven't had time to bleach. They've simply died, as if cooked. Corals are stationary animals that get their bright colors from the symbiotic algae they depend on for nutrients. When they're stressed from overheating, they release that algae, turning the reefs white. Usually, such bleaching doesn't mean the coral is dead, but it is a warning sign that it will perish unless conditions improve. Unfortunately, scientists think that's not going to happen anytime soon. Sea surface temperatures have been setting near daily records for more than a year, driven by an El Niño weather pattern and climate change. There's nowhere to hide from global warming, marine biologist Terry Hughes tells Scientific American. Even the most remote and most pristine coral reefs are vulnerable to these repeated bouts of bleaching. Loss of the world's reefs would be a massive blow to the marine ecosystem. Reefs nurture a quarter of all marine species at some point in their life cycles and support fish that are eaten by millions of people. Also from the Health and Science section, why tardigrades are so tough. Tardigrades, the microscopic eight-legged creatures, also called water bears, can shrug off blasts of radiation hundreds of times greater than the amount that would kill a human. A new study suggests that this freakish resilience may be because the animals have become experts at molecular repair, enabling them to quickly reassemble shattered DNA. The process itself is nothing unusual, reports the New York Times. Strands of DNA in human cell are broken about 40 times a day. Each time that happens, the cell has to fix them by producing repair proteins. What sets the tardigrade apart is the vast amount of these proteins it produces, level unseen in humans and other animals, and seemingly high enough to prevent radiation from causing permanent damage. It's unclear why the barrel-shaped organisms, which are typically between 0.3 and 0.5 millimeters in length, have evolved to develop such a resistance. After all, it's not as though they've been forced to survive in nuclear power plants or uranium-filled caves. But in any case, researchers hope that studying their special repair proteins could yield useful insights into possible treatments for cancer, or even ways to survive in space. Any tricks they use, study co-author Jean-Paul Corday from the Paris Natural History Museum, we might benefit from. Evening exercise is best. Working out in the evening rather than the morning might help you live longer. That's the conclusion of a new study by researchers in Australia, reports the New York Post. Researchers looked at the health data from nearly 30,000 obese people over 8 years. Participants wore activity trackers for 7 days nonstop, which allowed the researchers to group them into those who tended to move more in the morning, afternoon, or evening. After accounting for lifestyle factors such as smoking, alcohol consumption, and sedentary time, they found that the evening exercisers were less likely to suffer from everything from minor heart problems to death. It didn't have to be a full workout either. Any type of movement showed benefit as long as it got the heart rate up for a few minutes. Exercise is by no means the only solution to the obesity crisis, said lead researcher Matthew Amati from the University of Sydney, but this research does suggest that people who can plan their activity into certain times of the day may best offset some of those health risks. Finally, from the Health and Science section, kids' noses fight COVID. Why are children so much less likely than adults to develop COVID? It may be because their noses are better at fighting the virus, reports BBC.com. In a new study, scientists analyzed cells from the nasal lining of people in three different age groups: kids under 13, adults between 30 and 50, and those over 70. After growing the cells in lab dishes, they infected them with the novel coronavirus and watched what happened. The children's cells were quick to mount a defense against the virus by increasing production of interferon, an antiviral protein. But cells of the middle-aged group had a much slower response, while the over 70s actually produced more infectious viral particles. Study leader Claire Smith from the University College London says nasal cells deteriorate with age, possibly because they've been exposed to more nasties, resulting in a detrimental, dysfunctional repair process. She and her team now want to look at how the nose responds to other viruses like flu and RSV. Understanding the cellular differences at the initiation of infection is just the beginning, she says. And next, we'll move to the business section. First, tech. U.S. passes law to force TikTok sale. Congress delivered TikTok's Chinese owners a, quote, historic rebuke, end quote, said Cristiano Lima Strong in the Washington Post. After years of failed attempts to tackle the app's alleged national security risks, the House and Senate passed legislation to ban the video-sharing platform in the U.S. if its Beijing-based creator, ByteDance, doesn't sell it within 9 months. President Biden signed the measure, which was tucked into an aid package for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. TikTok made a frenzied lobbying push but didn't dissuade lawmakers, worried that the data of its 170 million American users is vulnerable to surveillance by China. This is where the process really gets, quote-unquote, complicated, said Sapina Meshwari and David McCabe in New York Times. TikTok is likely to keep fighting by challenging the measure in the courts. Beijing could get involved by blocking the sale or export of the technology, including the algorithm that figures out what users like and serves up content, and is crucial to the app's success. And TikTok will carry such a hefty price tag, it's unclear who could buy it. During the wrangling, the app will probably keep functioning in some form for U.S. users. It's going to be a royal mess, said one technology regulation expert. Also from the business section, reversals. Tesla profits drop amid steep sales decline. Tesla this week reported a quote-unquote dreary first quarter with a 55% plunge in profits from last year, said Laura Kolodny in CNBC.com. Profits for the quarter came in at $1.1 billion, and a 13% decline in sales was even steeper than the company's last decline in 2020 when the pandemic disrupted production. The news followed a rough patch that prompted the company to cut prices on U.S. models in response to weak sales. However, shares rose after CEO Elon Musk eased Wall Street's concerns with promises of a new robo-taxi network and plans to move up the introduction of a cheaper EV model. Protests. Google cracks down after Gaza war sit-in. Google this week fired 50 workers accused of disrupting its offices in New York and California with protests over the company's cloud computing contract with Israel, said Catherine Thornbeck in CNN.com. No Tech for Apartheid, which organized the sit-ins last week, accused Google of, quote, throwing a tantrum, end quote, because the show of worker strength embarrassed executives, and called the mass firing a desperate act of retaliation. Google CEO Sundar Pichai sent out a memo warning staffers to keep politics out of the office. He said, "This is a business." Some items from the bottom line column in the business section. Amazon's Prime subscription service hit a new high of 180 million U.S. shoppers in March, an increase of 8% from a year earlier. U.S. consumers pay Amazon $140 a year, or $15 per month, for a Prime subscription. This is from Bloomberg. The lowest salary the U.S. job seekers are willing to accept to take on a new job reached a record high of $81,822. This time last year, the figure was just under $76,000. On average, it takes about $95,500 to persuade men to take a new job, whereas women say they would accept roughly $66,300 from money. Americans spent nearly $73 billion on flowers, seeds, and potted plants last year, up 48% from 2019 after adjusting for inflation, according to U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis, the New York Times. Donald Trump's stake in his social media company, Trump Media, set to jump by more than 36 million shares, worth $1.3 billion. The Trump Media shares have fallen by half from their high. They've stayed above $17.50 target that earns Trump the additional shares, from the New York Times. International Labor Organization, ILO, reported that currently more than 70% of the world's workforce is exposed to excessive heat on at least one occasion every year. Workers suffer 22.85 million occupational injuries and 18,970 work-related deaths from excessive heat every year, from Axios. Finally, from the bottom line column, the descendants of the Danish butter magnate Lars Emil Brun will begin selling a 20,000-piece coin collection Brun had accumulated before his death in 1923. The collection is valued at $72 million, from Bloomberg. Finally, from the business segment, Unbound, FTC bans most non-compete agreements. The Federal Trade Commission this week voted to ban non-compete agreements in what could be a win for workers, said Emily Pekia Kokolacheva in Axios. These agreements keep about 30 million people, from fast food workers to doctors, from leaving to work for rival businesses. Critics say that can stifle innovation and wage growth. FTC estimates the change could increase the average worker's earnings by $524 annually, but the ban will surely get tied up in court. U.S. Chamber of Commerce said non-compete protects business secrets and training, and it's ready and willing to sue. We'll turn the page to the Making Money section. Workplace. The right to be left alone. Just imagine you end your workday at 6 p.m. when the boss slacks you at 8 p.m., you ignore them. Robin Abkarian in Los Angeles Times. Not only that, that boss could face fines for not respecting your, quote, right to disconnect, end quote. For a lot of workers, it sounds like a fantasy. But employees in California could have such rights enshrined into law. Democratic Assemblyman from San Francisco, Matt Haney, proposed new legislation earlier this month that would require a public or private employer to establish a workplace policy that provides employees the right to disconnect from workplace communications during non-working hours. Haney says the idea is based on a better work-life balance law recently passed in Australia and similar practices in at least a dozen other countries. It's time that workers in the United States got relief from the 24/7 workplace, too. We desperately need this legislation because always-on culture is literally making us sick, said Chris Morris in Fast Company. The inability to disconnect had been linked to chronic stress and emotional exhaustion, but workers fear getting overlooked for promotion even more than they fear wrecking their health. Haney's bill does make exceptions for emergencies and organized labor, allowing collective bargaining to take precedence. But it's not that workplaces can never ping workers after hours, They just have to explicitly detail ahead of time that workers are needed. Evidence from European right to disconnect laws seems to be relatively positive, said Andre Spicer in The Guardian. Employees say they feel more in control of their work, which has led to higher job satisfaction, better work-life balance, and fewer health issues such as headaches, stress, and anxiety. This law is salvation for people like me who find it difficult to stop themselves from working all the time. Indeed, businesses should make sure that employees know they are not expected to be available 24/7, said Livia De Bastos Martini in Newsweek. But what freedom means for workers is flexibility, not a one-size-fits-all policy that makes every company create a rigid schedule. No doubt there are bad bosses who exploit their workers, said the Wall Street Journal in an editorial. And then those bosses tend to lose the best workers. Receiving emails after hours is the flip side of a more flexible work arrangements that workers say they want. They have more freedom to pick up their children from school, and in exchange, they're sometimes expected to respond to important emails while at their kids' soccer games. It's interesting that this bill comes out in California. Has Haney ever been to Silicon Valley, where 9-to-5 working hours are far from the norm? Also from the Making Money section, gold bugs find selling is not easy. Costco is selling as much as $200 million in gold bars a month, said Catherine Hamilton in the Wall Street Journal. The wholesale retailer, where shoppers go for bulk orders of laundry detergent and toothpaste, started selling one-ounce slabs of bullion last October, and they've become a huge hit with a new wave of gold buyers. Younger investors have taken an interest in precious metals to protect their wealth against inflation and economic disaster. But while Costco, which offers the metal at very close to world market prices, makes buying gold easy, selling it is difficult. Costco won't buy back the bars or accept returns, and online dealers charge fees. There are always pawn shops, but they almost never offer market value. Hidden fees for rejecting medical claims. An obscure consultant advises insurers in ways that often saddle patients with huge bills, said Chris Hamby in the New York Times. When an employee is covered by a workplace health insurance, goes outside the network for care, many insurance companies consult with a little-known data analytics firm called MultiPlan on what to pay. The Times found that MultiPlan typically recommends that the employers not cover the whole bill. Insurer then gets paid a share of the money it quote-unquote saved the employer, with MultiPlan also collecting a processing fee. Patients get left on the hook for the remainder of the bill. Employers, too, can feel ripped off. One trucking company found that Cigna, the large insurance company, charged it a $50,650 fee to manage a $152,594 bill, of which just $7,879 was covered. Finally, from Making Money section, Truth Social's True Believers. Supporters of Donald Trump, who invested in his money-losing social media company, have seen their share values plunge in recent days, said Drew Harwell in the Washington Post. They don't seem to be worried, however. Many of them consider their investments as, quote, less a business calculation than a statement of faith in the former president, end quote. Todd Schlanger, interior designer in West Palm Beach, Florida, blames the drop in the stock, about 40% since late March, on all the, quote, liberals that are trying to knock it down, end quote. Jerry Dean McLean, who owns a tree removal service in Oklahoma, has lost most of the $25,000 he put into Trump media so far, but believes a rebound is coming. It's in Trump's hands, McClain said, and he's got plans. Our next segment from The Week magazine, Talking Points. First, homelessness. Should it be illegal? Can municipalities make it a crime to sleep outdoors? That's the question Supreme Court debated this week in what could lead to its most significant ruling on homelessness in decades, said Anne Marimo and Reese Thibault in The Washington Post. The case centers on three ordinances in the town of Grants Pass, Oregon, that ban camping or sleeping on public property and issuing blankets or cardboard for warmth. Punishments include a $295 fine with additional fines and jail for non-payment. Lawyers for homeless residents argued that since Grants Pass doesn't offer adequate shelter space, the ordinances criminalize homelessness itself, thus violate the constitutional prohibition on cruel and unusual punishment. During oral arguments, the Supreme Court's conservative majority expressed reluctance to, quote-unquote, micromanage local laws on the homeless, but acknowledged it might be unfair to punish people who have no choice but to sleep outdoors. Liberal Justice Sonia Sotomayor asked what homeless people should do when night comes. Are they supposed to kill themselves, not sleeping? Actually, it's homeless encampment culture that's cruel and unusual punishment, said Stephen Eddy in National Review. In the U.S., about 300,000 people sleep outdoors every night. On the West Coast in particular, many have set up massive tent cities that are hotbeds of drug taking, untreated mental illness, and crime. People sleeping in them are exposed to theft, assault, and disease. The Constitution isn't a suicide pact, said the Wall Street Journal in an editorial. Outdoor homeless camps are threats to public safety, and local officials have a right to protect their citizens. It's no surprise that the justices struggled with the issue, said Matt Ford in the New Republic. Even conservative Justice Amy Coney Barrett seemed torn, noting that a ban on sleeping outdoors would only shunt homeless people or the poor out of your jurisdiction and on to others. Liberal Justice Elena Kagan argued that homelessness is, quote, a status, end quote, not an act that can be punished. For a homeless person who has no place to go, sleeping in public is kind of like breathing in public, Kagan said. No one expects the Supreme Court's decision to solve the country's homelessness crisis, said Mark Joseph Stern in Slate, but allowing cities and towns to ban sleeping outdoors will do nothing to help people who lack housing or make them disappear. Some items from the Noted column and Talking Points. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children received some 36 million reports of online child abuse in 2023, up 12% over the previous year. Most reports related to the circulation of photos and videos of child sexual abuse. 4,700 of those images and videos were created with the use of generative artificial intelligence. This from The Guardian. Complaints of pregnant women being turned away from emergency rooms spiked after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022. A month after the decision, a woman in Texas miscarried in an ER lobby restroom after front desk staff refused to check her in. In North Carolina, a woman gave birth in her car after being refused an ultrasound. The baby later died. Fears of legal liability in states with strict abortion bans have made pregnant patients, quote-unquote, radioactive to ERs, said health law expert Sarah Rosenbaum from the Associated Press. Since 2021, at least five states have passed laws that say school and public librarians can be imprisoned or fined for handing out obscene or harmful books to children. 17 other states are considering such measures. Under an Arkansas bill passed last year, Liberians can be imprisoned for up to 6 years or fined $10,000, from the Washington Post. Finally, in the noted column, readership of the 10 largest right-wing websites dropped 40% from February of 2020 to this February, according to the Writing website that tracks conservative media. The Daily Wire lost 44% of its readership, the Daily Caller 57%, and the Federalist 91%, from the Atlantic. We'll take a little bit of a detour to a best column from the U.S., A Curious Way to Save Democracy, by E.J. Dionne Jr. of the Washington Post. In a recent poll, 7 out of 10 Americans agreed that, quote, democracy is currently under threat, end quote. This according to E.J. Dionne Jr. Is this a rare moment of kumbaya bipartisan consensus? Quite the opposite. Drill down a bit more, and what concerns Republicans is that it's become too easy to cast ballots, with 82% of them saying they're worried about widespread voter fraud. Among Democrats, 76% are concerned about laws and practices that Republican-run states have adopted to make it harder to vote. To pander to the Trumpist right, House Speaker Mike Johnson recently called for federal legislation requiring proof of citizenship from every voter. But it's already illegal for non-citizens to vote, and there's no evidence, zip, that fraud is a problem in our system. Multiple studies by the Brennan Center for Justice found that the actual voter fraud rate falls somewhere between 0.0003 and 0.0025%. In 2020, the expansion of early and mail balloting produced a record turnout, with Trump getting 11.2 million more votes than he got 4 years earlier. But Biden got 7 million more votes than Trump. The Republican solution? Make sure that fewer people vote. Next, from The Week magazine, the People section, Imperiale's first big shot. Michael Imperiale bled for his breakthrough role, said Zach Helfand in The New Yorker. The actor was 23 when he was cast in Goodfellas as Spider, a mafia associate who gets whacked by Joe Pesci's hot-headed Tommy while serving drinks. Director Martin Scorsese had hired a stunt double for the murder scene. I said, I could do that, recalls Imperioli, 58. Marty said, yeah, let the kid do it, said Imperioli was fitted with squibs, tiny explosives filled with fake blood, handed a glass. I did the stunt fine, but when I hit the ground, the glass broke and I sliced open two of my fingers really badly. Imperioli was rushed to a New York City ER, where his Hollywood get-up duped medics. They were coming at me with stretchers because I have 3 bullet holes in my chest. They think I'm about to die. I said, I'm in a movie with Robert De Niro. I cut my hand. They think I'm delirious. In the trauma room, they cut my shirt up open, see all the squibbing. I said, I told you I'm in a movie, Robert De Niro. Despite the injury, Imperioli calls his Goodfellas experience a dream come true. To be an Italian-American, New York actor, all of a sudden, I mean, Scorsese and De Niro were idols. I was like, you were playing college baseball and suddenly you're in the World Series at Yankee Stadium. Also from the People section, how Bon Jovi lost his voice. John Bon Jovi's best singing days may be behind him, said Emily Lordy in the New York Times. While touring in the late 2010s, the Bon Jovi frontman noticed that his vocal range was shrinking. In March of 2022, a specialist determined that one of his vocal cords was atrophying. I thought I could get my voice back in shape if I just did enough shows, said Bon Jovi, 62, so we went back on the road. The results of that U.S. tour weren't pretty. Normally friendly local rock critics blasted his dismal vocals. After a show in Nashville, he told his wife, Dorothea, that he thought his performance was pretty good. She gave him a flat no, a major wake-up call. So that June, Bon Jovi underwent vocal cord surgery. He now has vocal therapy 4 times a week. It's not easy to not be the best guy in the band. It's not easy to be the worst. It's humbling, but I don't mind the humility. I just want my tools back. By this March, he was again managing to hit the high notes in Livin' on a Prayer, which helped give him enough confidence to say yes, in theory, to a few overseas tour dates this summer, but I'm still not sure what to expect. If I have all my tools, it'll be a joy. Rhymes' search for security. Shonda Rhimes is terrified by some of her fans, said Deka Altkenhead in the Sunday Times of the UK, creator of hit series such as Grey's Anatomy, Scandal, and Bridgerton. Rhimes used to tell interviewers how much she enjoyed interacting online with her show's devotees. Not anymore. Fans have passionate feelings, and I was always fine with that, said Rhimes, 54. I understand that the characters felt like their friends. They were my imaginary friends, too. That's why I was writing them. But about a decade ago, it became weird. After each season finale of Grey's Anatomy, she had to have a police cruiser parked outside her Los Angeles home because of death threats from viewers who were angry about the ending. Eventually, Rhimes needed 24-hour security. I wanted to just be able to walk out my front door and hang out with my kids and not be worried. I would lay awake at night with stress, she says. Famous friends who've been through similar situations told her, if you can't live normally, then you're not going to be able to live. So, in 2020, Rhimes moved with her 3 children to a state she won't name. I'm not interested in being anybody's lightning rod. You say something, suddenly you're like a poster child for what's wrong with America or whatever. It's creepy and it's disturbing to me. And from the Poll Watch column, 50% of Americans, including 47% of independents and 15% of Republicans, say they will consider Donald Trump unfit to be president if he's convicted of falsifying business documents to conceal hush money payments, but only 35% think his actions were illegal in the hush money case, compared with 45% who say he broke the law in trying to overturn the 2020 election, and 47% in taking classified documents. From AP/NORC. And let's wrap up with some wit and wisdom. Why do we need to make the rich richer to make them work harder, but make the poor poorer for the same purpose? Economist Ha-Joon Chang quoted in the New York Times. Regret is an appalling waste of energy. You can't build on it. It's only good for wallowing in. Writer Catherine Mansfield quoted in The Knowledge. They say housework can't kill you, but why take a chance? Phyllis Diller quoted in Duluth News Tribune. A successful man is one who can lay a firm foundation with the bricks others have thrown at him. David Brinkley quoted in the San Francisco Chronicle. I just filled out my income tax. Who says you can't get killed by a blank? Milton Berle, quoted in the Canton, Ohio Repository. You cannot always build the future for our youth, but we can build our youth for the future. Franklin Roosevelt, quoted in Architecture Today. Finally, from Wit and Wisdom, technology is anything that was invented after you were born. Everything else is just stuff. Computer scientist Alan Key, quoted in BBC.com. And that's all we have time for today. I've been reading from the May 3rd installment of The Week magazine. We thank you for listening. So long until next time.